Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Drive Talk podcast. Paired and myself are down here at the wonderful podium place. We're in the roastery, and yeah, it's another lovely day out there weather-wise.
And it's lovely and warm out there, but the aircon was on a bit hard in here. It's freezing.
It was.
Hence, he's got his hat on. It's like one of the warmest days we've had so far this year. And I know it's some branding.
It is, yeah. That's the most important thing, actually. And while we're on that,
yeah,
big shout out to Michelin, headline sponsor. And yeah, I think today, I always look forward to the price comparison podcast that we do.
Yeah.
Because I never know what you're going to choose. You never know what I'm going to choose. And that's part of the fun of it, is I don't want to know until it's live.
Yeah. So today's subject is the dreaded, I'm going to say 4x4. But then, we used to go on 4x4s, then it became SUVs, which is a real Americanism, I think. But yeah, the big SUV trend that we've seen in the last 10, 15 years, probably.
Well, it's longer than that. I think so. We're just talking a tiny bit off camera. We're like, no, turn the cameras on.
And we always do that. We talk about what we're going to talk about, do all the really good stuff before the cameras are rolling. Yeah. So we stopped ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, it's like we're SUV, and I get told off, rightly so, in my videos recently, ironically, about calling SUVs. I say, oh, yeah, this is a sporty SUV, or it's a sports SUV. Well, SUV stands for sports utility vehicle, right?
Yeah.
So I'm saying it's, as we started with, a sports utility vehicle, which doesn't make sense. But 4x4s have been around forever. I mean, yeah. Range Rover, Land Rovers, Land Cruisers, you know, since, what, the 70s? And
yeah.
But then SUVs kind of did start at the turn of the century, I think-ish. Yeah. Because I know that I think, off memory, the first that I would call sports SUV, the first 4x4 that had any kind of dynamic driving element to it is, I would say, the original BMW X5, which was originally launched in 1999.
Wow.
So that's 25 years, which is crazy to think it's been around that long. But and then obviously there was a lot of others that followed. And
But back then they were like niche vehicles. And now we've almost got to the point where they're mainstream and everything else is niche, because it seems like every other car on the road's an SUV.
They've become a big trend, haven't they? And people love them, rightly and wrongly. And I know we're going to really delve deep into them during this episode. And I would never ever call myself an SUV fan, but the more I drive, especially the more recent versions of them, the more I appreciate and love them. And I don't know if it's just because I'm getting older and lazier, but there's so many benefits, again, which we'll go into, that you can't deny and take away. But I think someone who grew up in London, hasn't lived there for over 10 years now, they used to frustrate me because they would always be part of the congestion problem in places like London.
Yeah.
You know, the bigger, massive cars with one person, one company director in it, cruising around, and it's just like, but anyway, yeah, I'm going off on a tangent.
So if we go right back then, so if we start off, I'm going to start off by calling them 4x4s. So yep. You mentioned Land Rover and Range Rover. I guess you could also talk about Jeep.
Yep.
You could talk about G-Wagons even, because they've been around forever.
Yeah, since, again, the 70s?
Yeah, probably. You know, all of those vehicles mentioned, they kind of started off, they were four-wheel drive for a reason. They either came out of the military and became civilian vehicles, or they were designed for kind of agriculture and country. So, you know, driving around your estate, being a farmer, moving sheep around, towing horse boxes or whatever.
Yep.
And they were very much a kind of utilitarian vehicle that had a job. And then they started to become popular. And I think when Land Rover launched Range Rover, that was never really intended to be a luxury vehicle. It was just the next evolution of the series Land Rover. I think it was just a slightly bigger format. It was still aimed at being a kind of rugged farmer's vehicle.
Yep.
And it evolved into, I guess, what we now think of now as Range Rover, but a luxury vehicle. And it started to be driven on tarmac rather than on ploughed fields and woodland tracks.
Yeah, tarmac 99.9% of the time, yeah.
And they kind of came out. So you got Land Rover with their Range Rover, I guess. In the UK, we get hung up with Range Rover and kind of say it's the best thing in the world. But actually, if you go to lots of parts of the world, especially the Middle East, there, and I guess in Australia as well, their go-to would be a Land Cruiser, right?
Yeah.
You can't go anywhere without seeing Land Cruisers, and they did exactly the same thing.
Yep.
And for me, that kind of vehicle in that crossover role where you might, you know, I used to have a horse, we had a horse box, we needed a vehicle to tow the horse box. And really for me, I know you see saloon cars and estate cars towing caravans and horse boxes and stuff, but it just sends shivers down my spine that you need a proper big vehicle to tow something heavy. And that's why we had a big 4x4, because we lived in the countryside and we needed it to do its job.
You also, I suppose, with the horses and stuff, you're going through fields and sketchy ground that you needed that traction. You actually needed a 4x4.
Exactly. So in that context, totally get it.
Yep.
I guess the frustration lots of people have is that the trend that kind of led by Range Rover, but like you said, X5 came out, and then Porsche came out with their Cayenne. And I remember when that launched, you know, for a start, I remember the really first one, it did just look like they'd jacked up a 911.
Yeah.
It was like the top part was like a 996, yes. 911 pretty much.
Even had the fried egg sort of headlights.
And I remember people going, but this is a performance 4x4, surely that can't work. But what they managed to do, and I think the success of 4x4s and turning into SUVs, is those early 4x4s, they were brilliant off-road.
Yep.
You could drive them on the road, but they weren't the best dynamically to drive, were they? I mean, you know, you drive like an early, I don't know, Discovery, the first generation of Discovery. They were terrifying when you tipped them into a corner.
Yeah.
Like body roll and everything. But then suddenly they started to make 4x4s that went round corners and were quick in a straight line. And that's where this SUV thing came, I think.
Yes. Yeah. It's I think you're right. I think because they've sold in such big numbers and they've become such, especially for brands like Porsche that you mentioned, BMW, they've become such an important model that then they have invested so much money and time into producing much better driver cars and objects and machines that literally, and I've said it in so many recent SUV videos, they defy, and they really do defy physics.
Yeah.
And then you almost get out of some of them going, well, if this is this good and we're sitting this high off the ground, how is the sports equivalent not so much better? Like, do you know what I mean? It's unreal. So they're impressive bits of kit, but do we need them? It's a big question.
Well, there we
you
go.
Know, like we look at, I think you look at the sort of way we're going with obviously going into electric, and we talk about them being really heavy and big electric cars and stuff, but that's all been happening way before electric cars with the SUVs and our obsession with these big, heavy cars that are getting bigger and bigger, making it more difficult to drive on the road, because if you've got one coming towards you and you're in one, there's hardly any room on an A or B road. Yeah. All the running costs that are associated with them as well. It's an interesting segment of car, but I think it's the sort of thing that these days you can't get away from the fact that they are getting better and better. And I think if I had loads of money, I would definitely have one in my dream sort of 10-car garage, which I know we're going to get onto.
We're going to get onto that. I guess the other thing, again, we were talking before we started, the cameras rolling, and we went, stop. But it's we used to have a segment of car, and they're still there, I guess, but we just don't talk about it so much. MPVs, the kind of people carriers.
Was that a multi-purpose vehicle?
I think so.
Oh, yeah, it's a multi-purpose vehicle.
But that was, I guess, Renault Espace was one of the first.
Yeah.
And then Ford had the S-Max, and you had lots of different versions of that.
Yep.
Even right up to Mercedes basically taking one of their vans and putting nice
V-Class or
Vito or whatever.
Yeah, Vito, yeah.
And I kind of got that, as I guess, as families grew. So if you went back, you know, we used to say, was it 2.4 children, wasn't it? It was the average size of the family.
Yep.
And if you've got a little saloon car, you can get three kids in the back, and then you're struggling. So to move them around to do holidays and all that kind of stuff, that MPV class of vehicle came along. And I think, whilst they're still there and we still see the bigger vehicles with you know, maybe five or six or seven seats. The SUV class came along, and lots of the really big ones, you know, Discovery, the new Kia EV9, they're those types of cars, they'll have seven seats in the back.
Yep.
It kind of became the, you know, you'd have two seats in the front, a bench seat with three, and then two seats that were under the floor in the boot.
Yep.
And suddenly you've got a seven seat car, but it's in the format of a SUV.
Yeah. 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 The MPVs have kind of almost died, right?
Yeah. I was driving here today. I was following a Renault Espace and went past a Vauxhall Zafira GSI, which was like a seven seat MPV, but yep. They did the GSI version with like a lowered suspension and nice wheels and
20 years old.
Yeah, probably. 04, yeah, but it still looked quite cool though.
Yeah.
I was going past and going, damn, that looks quite a cool car.
Yeah.
And it just made me think, oh my God, MPVs, you know, that used to be a big segment of car, and it seems like they've been put to one side. And now everybody's just doing the old SUV thing.
Yeah.
But it is, they're, you know, you only have to go into an average high street car park, whether that's in a supermarket or just off the shopping, you know, off the shopping street. And you see loads of big SUVs, and they're filling the car park spaces. I was listening to a thing on the radio last week where, you know, they were talking about, how, you know, have car park spaces got smaller, or is it just that cars have got bigger? And I think it's probably the latter of those two, but
yep.
knowing what local authorities are like, they probably made the car park spaces
smaller as well,
so they can get more of them in and then charge you more to park in them. But,
yeah.
So the SUV thing. So the bit you mentioned about the defying the laws of physics, the bit that I do find it unreal is when you drive a modern day performance SUV and just how good they are.
Incredible.
They're comfortable. They generally ride really nicely. That elevated driving position. But it's the, what are the drivers? So is it the industry saying this is the format of car that you want? Or is it us kind of slowly, by buying those types of cars? Because it's not just the big SUVs. Then we've got the kind of mid-size and compact SUV segment and those crossover cars. But they've all got the same thing in common. They're all a bit jacked up. And I'm wondering whether, I think the SUV market is driven a lot by foreign markets like China, like the Middle East, who just love those big cars.
Yep.
Someone once told me that's one of the reasons why car grills are so big, because in China, big car grills are a real kind of thing, a big status symbol. And a lot of the manufacturers make their cars with big car grills.
So I don't know any manufacturers that make big grills.
No, I don't know. No. Anybody from Germany, maybe?
No.
Didn't think of that. But then the other thing is it the kind of aging population? And I've had some comments on videos before, people like the mid-size SUV because they're easier to get in and out of than a saloon car or an estate car.
Yeah.
Because if you're a driver and you want practicality, you buy like your M3 Touring, you buy a really nice estate car.
Yeah.
You've got a big boot in the back, room for five passengers.
Yep.
And it makes sense to make one of those sporty, to make a fast wagon.
Because a lot of these SUVs, you say my M3, so 3 Series, the equivalent would be the X3.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, people buy these SUVs because they're like, oh, we need a bigger, more practical vehicle. But actually, most of the time, they're exactly the same size cabin and boot, sometimes smaller than what they're based on, but they're just jacked up in the air.
Yeah.
But then, like you said, it's the comfort of getting in and out, or not that I can speak from experience because I don't have any kids, but it's getting kids in and out of child seats. If the rear bench is 5 or 6 inches higher, I'm sure it's a lot easier to load in and out and do whatever you need to do. So there is that. But I think it's a bit of a false, not a false economy, it's a bit of a false thought process if you instantly think, oh, I'm going to get an X3 because I need more space than my 3 Series Touring. It's most of the time it's no bigger.
Yeah.
It just, but the car is bigger. It's bigger on the outside, but it's actually no bigger on the inside.
Yeah.
It's I don't know. It's interesting. You've had some Range.
Yeah, so we had, I guess it started, talk about the horse, started with a Mitsubishi Shogun short wheelbase.
That was a big horsey car, wasn't it? Because one of my best mates' sister had one. And
they were like the best tow car for years and years.
Yeah.
But, you know, a horse box empties about a ton, and then each horse is about 500-600 kilos.
Wow.
So you put two horses in. You need a 3.5-ton tow capacity car, really. So
sure.
I actually sold I went from a Mark 1 Audi TT Roadster to a Mitsubishi Shogun.
Wow.
I know. It was a bad day. And then, so we ran that for a while, and then we ended up actually, what a lot of horse, I was competing in eventing at the time, and I was going away and wanting to stay away, so we went from a horse box or trailer to a lorry.
Okay.
We bought a lorry with living and stuff, and then and you stayed in a and then that meant I didn't need a tow car then, so then I bought a Honda S2000, which was much
better. Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, much better.
But then Tracy, because we really liked the whole raised living, raised driving position thing, we then bought a Freelander.
Okay.
Which we ran. It's funny, we were talking in the last podcast about reliability and some cars having a really bad rap for reliability. Everyone always says that about Land Rover. We ran a Freelander for, we nearly put 100,000 miles on it. Never an issue. Absolutely.
Wow.
Brilliant car.
Yep.
So we ran that. Then we went from Freelander to Discovery 3,
yep,
which is still one of the best cars we've ever had.
Yep.
What just a fantastic car. But going back to the handling thing, the difference between Discovery 2 and Discovery 3 in terms of handling was like night and day.
Sure.
Just such a good car.
Because the Discovery 3 and 4 were on the same platform as the original Sport, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, yeah, so yeah, they had actually, at that point, they'd gone, right, we need, you could get like this stability, not stability control, the
anti-roll. Yeah,
anti-roll.
It was on air suspension. Yeah, yeah, brilliant.
Get, all
brilliant
of that car was there, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Discovery 3, and then we were going to go Discovery 4, and we ended up going Range Rover Sport.
Yep.
Mark 1 Range Rover Sport, we got an Autobiography one, which was just mega spec.
Yep.
But interestingly, we didn't. Neither was, I loved that car. Tracy just never got on with it at all.
Okay.
And then we ended up going from that. What did we buy after? Oh, well, then we went to Audi S4.
Okay. S4 Avant.
S4 Avant.
Okay.
We had two of those.
Yep.
So yeah, so I have had some SUVs, and they are, you know, they're comfy and they're luxurious. And, you know, the Range Rover Sport we had was just a mega car.
Yeah.
The amazing thing, though, we had the first gen Range Rover Sport. When the second gen Range Rover Sport came out, they weighed 600 kilos less than the first gen.
Wow.
Because they went from a steel chassis to an aluminium one.
And it was almost like, was it like a double chassis or something?
Yeah, I won't say it wasn't the best, but the difference between Gen 1 and Gen 2 Range Rover is just like nightmare.
Yeah.
It's like having a Caterham on the roof.
Right, yeah.
So we loved the whole SUV thing. And then we went fast wagon. And to be honest, that was it for us. The two S4s we had the 3-litre supercharged, and then we had the 3-litre turbocharged, and they were just mega things.
Yep.
Really mega things. And the only reason we don't have one now is we don't really need to, with kind of press cars and long-termers and that kind of thing. We've already got too many cars parked outside the house.
Yeah. Another Aston. There's always Astons here.
Very nice. I've coming from a point of experience, I get them, and I love them, and they're amazing things to drive. But when you actually start to break it down, they kind of don't really make a great deal of sense.
No.
And no. I did, when we had the Shogun, I off-roaded that quite a bit, and I towed with that a lot. So really utilized it for what it was. And it was on BF. Goodrich all-terrain tires, and
nice.
You know, it was mega. It went everywhere, but I can't say I don't think we took the Range Rover Sport anywhere other than a grassy field, probably, or a snowy car park.
And that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, they're all so obviously. I know. I'm sure if you had to put your money in it, I think Range Rover products and Land Rover, Land Cruiser, Toyota Land Cruiser, those two are probably still going to be ultimately the best off-road. But then you look at the KN, which you'd think in your head, if you didn't know much about them, you'd be like, oh, yeah, okay, I'm sure it's got a better ground clearance than the 911, but can't be that good. But I've been on a few experience days, one at actually Porsche Experience Center at Silverstone, which we've been to.
Yeah.
Fantastic place that you could do the off-road segment of it, and what you can do in a KN. And again, I'm sure I'm confident you could do it in the Range Rover and probably a number of other SUVs out there, but it was just like, wow. So this car, that's when you really appreciate it. Yeah. Will you ever get to use that? Probably not, but wow, this car is impressive on road, and it can do this off road like, you know.
And if you go to those experience days, Land Rover definitely do it, and I'm pretty sure Porsche do, is they make sure that they're on the normal road tires that
yes.
come out the factory on.
Yeah, not
they're
cheating.
not on like mud terrain tires or
no,
anything.
No,
and they will go anywhere. So they are, and I know people say, "Oh, you never take the off road." And Jeep are the same. You go and buy, you get like a Jeep Wrangler or a Jeep Grand Cherokee. They are unbelievable off road.
Yeah, but not so great on road.
No, well, the Jeep Trackhawk is the Grand Cherokee with a heavy V8. That's wicked.
Yeah. Oh, you had one? Did you have a press car?
No,
one?
I've driven quite a few.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
In Italy, and they are mega
things. Yeah.
These ridiculous things.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they are, if you are that, you know, and I live in the countryside and I, you know, I know lots of people who've got 4x4s, you see them a lot, and you know, I live on a farm and you see the guys go shooting and all that kind of stuff. Where they don't make so much sense for me is in a more urban environment, in a city. You go around London and the amount of Range Rovers and Bentaygas and those types of things you see, you're like, and Cullinans, you're like, really?
Yeah.
Just don't get it at all.
No, I don't. And again, growing up, living in London, driving for many years in London or cycling in London, whatever, I just couldn't think of anything worse. And I know the last episode we talked a bit about Rolls Royce. And for a couple of weeks, I had a Cullinan.
I thought you were going to say something else, Cunning. No, Joe.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Yeah. Don't look it up, kids.
That's the national airline of Ireland, isn't it?
Oh, no. Anyway, bring it back. Driving one of those around, it was just so big. And it was just, to me, you couldn't park it anywhere. You couldn't leave it anywhere. You couldn't drive it down any of the narrow streets. I was constantly paranoid. Okay, probably not helped by the fact it was a £300,000 Rolls Royce. But yeah, I just didn't understand what is the, if I lived in London, didn't matter if I was a company director or whatever, I'd have something like a Mini Electric or something. I'd have something small and easy to get. A smart car, if you're literally commuting around London, something small and easy to get around in, you know? But the
thing is, though, they've elevated themselves to this status symbol thing, haven't they?
Yes, So you
drive a Cullinan or, you know, any of these really high-end premium SUVs.
Yep.
And that's as much a statement of look at me and look how much money I've got as this is the car I need to drive.
And they do give you that. I remember the first time I ever had driven a Range Rover, I went out to watch the Le Mans Classic in 2007, I think it was. My good friend, Laura, her old man, went out there. He was racing an AC Cobra. He owns a beautiful AC Cobra that's period correct and been in Le Mans back in the day. And his tow car was like a top of the range Range Rover, whatever it was, autobiography. At the time, it was like 6 months old or something. And I remember that was the first time I'd got to drive one around. And I remember literally the second I was behind the wheel of that car, I became such an arrogant knob.
Get out of the way, peasants.
I'm embarrassed to say this, and I am sorry, and I'm not like this at all. Since or before,
coming out.
But I remember we went, me and a couple of guys, we went to McDonald's in Le Mans.
Classy.
And there was a big queue going in, like off the main street. And I drove straight over through, they had like these divides with small gardens. And I literally just drove straight through the gardens and drove straight into the car park because we just didn't want to queue up. And probably parked, I think, across about three spaces. And I got out and instantly I was like, why did I just, like, what is wrong with me? But that was just, that car gave me that like complete arrogance of, I'm bigger and better than any of you peasants, and I'm going to pop.
You drove over someone's garden.
It was the McDonald's garden. It was probably
McDonald's garden.
It was probably plastic plants and stuff. It wasn't, when I say garden, it was a bit of soil with some weeds in it. It was like, but literally, to this day, I look back on that and I'm like, why? What urge? Why did I do that? And I'll put it down to the fact that it was the first time I felt that. Look at me in my big car. And back then I was higher and taller than anyone else. And there was all these, you know, small little French Renault 5s. And I'm like, there I am in my big red. And it's just like, what was wrong with you? Why did that happen? So I think there is, but that definitely is how people feel. And I think a lot of these Range Rovers and these bigger cars are whatever extensions for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're classified. So if you live in the countryside and you need to tow something or you need to do, you know, a bit of off-roading, whatever, 4x4 4x4s are great.
Yep.
If you want to have a sense of self-importance and be an arrogant asshole and basically drive over McDonald's car yep. parks and get to the front of a driving queue.
Yep.
They're great.
They're brilliant.
Right. And if you want people to kind of say, you know, see how well you've done in life, they're great.
Yep.
They are also quite comfortable to be on a long journey. You know, if anyone, I know there'll be people out there that maybe have never been in it. I keep using Range Rover. It would be the same if you drove a Land Cruiser, although I've always thought Range Rovers are way better than Land Cruisers, but that's just...
I think for road stuff, definitely, yeah.
I mean, I know, what do they say, if you... there's some Toyota Land Cruiser owners have some phrases, basically, if you want to drive there, go in a Range Rover. If you want to make it all the way back, go in a Land Cruiser.
Yeah, something like that makes... Yeah,
But they are really comfortable places to do a long journey. They cosset you in a... You know, the nice driving position, you feel comfortable and safe, and they are amazing things, and I think it's difficult to deny that.
And you see, even though you're only 4, 5, 6 inches higher, you see if it's a familiar journey to, like, I don't know, Nürburgring or somewhere that, you know, 5, 6 hours in the car, you do see more stuff because you tend to be slightly above that hedgerow or the build.
You get the over fences into where peasants live.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can throw things at them and everything.
You can look down into cars and see the poor people as you go past.
Exactly, yeah.
So I get that. So my next question, though, is what is the point of a performance SUV? And I know you said it's a sports utility vehicle, but so a performance SUV, the one that springs to mind for me is a Lamborghini Urus.
God. I hate
those. Because that's things. Never going to go off-road, right?
And they're so ugly.
Yeah.
I mean, a Urus owner is literally, look at me and look at my money. That's all that car is. As far as I'm concerned, a Lamborghini owner is like that. But a Urus owner is another. It's like, literally, look at me. I've got no taste. And I've presumably got loads of money, but it's probably finances. I can't quite afford the monthlies. That's what a Urus owner is to me. I just, yeah. But that really confuses me, that car. I've never driven one. I've never had the desire to drive one, although I would. I'm sure if I got behind the wheel
of
one.
You've driven an RSQ8. So
RSQ8, yeah. But what I have heard about Urus from reliable sources is the ride quality is awful. Because it's set up so stiff to be so sporty, whereas something like the RSQ8, it's an amazing performance car, but yet it's really comfortable when you want it to be comfortable. So yeah, the Urus is like the pinnacle, isn't it? The pinnacle of
why?
The pinnacle of why?
Because they're not cheap either. You think if you're going to drop that kind of money,
yeah,
then you could probably buy a supercar and something like an M3 Touring.
Yep,
and have the best of both worlds. You'd have your performance for the weekend and a rapid fast wagon, you know.
Yeah, I think, but then that's the argument for a lot of these fast performance SUVs, is that exact question, is why not have two of the same? But I suppose, as we all know, like having, you and I are lucky enough to have a couple of, sometimes it is, nowadays, you've got two insurance premiums, you've got two. Okay, if you've got a Urus...
Well, we could talk about insurance in a minute, actually. Keep going.
Yeah. Well, you've just got a number of things, haven't you? Where to park it and all the rest of it. Although, I'm sure, again, if you're going to afford one of them, you've probably got a few parking spaces. But yeah, and if it is the car that you want to do everything, then I don't know. There's an argument for a lot of cars and choices out there.
I mean, there's that one car garage cliche, isn't it? Which everyone throws around whenever you drive an RS4, RS6, M3 Touring, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It does everything. Well, yes, it does. I mean, it probably does everything better than a performance SUV does.
Yep.
Because I wouldn't want to track. You can imagine tracking a performance SUV, any of them are going to eat tyres and brakes. And then, you know, I know we talk about them handling well and they do amazing things. I mean, an Aston Martin DBX rolls less than the Vantage because of the way that they engineer that.
Yeah.
So, having driven both, I still don't really understand how it does that. You tip a DBX into a corner and it just doesn't roll. And you're like, you're thinking, they go, well, I don't understand how that's possible.
Yeah.
But the problem is, it's like the whole EV thing. They handle really well right up until the point they don't. And then by that time,
you're
so fast.
Yeah.
Then you basically go straight to the scene of the nearest accident.
There's so much energy, isn't there? It's like, and then, yeah, you get to a point. Yeah, it is, yeah. But I'm sure, again, some of these, I know Johnny Cocco, who runs a JCR Exhaust, After spending a lot of time in one, I can understand how. He had an X5M competition. I don't know if he's still got it, but he took it to a track day with Archie Hamlin, actually. And Johnny's an incredible pro driver. But he was, like, they were overtaking on, I think it was one of the track days where you're allowed to go on either side, but yeah. They were overtaking under, they were just destroying everything out there for like a couple of laps. But again, I'm sure they got two laps in before the tires started melting and everything else. But I mean, again, just like, how is that, even if it is just one or two laps, like, fair play. And I actually, at the end of last year, I went out to Spain with Porsche for the Cayenne e-hybrid launch, and drove a couple of them around this really cool circuit. I can't remember the name of it, but it's a circuit I'd never heard of, but it's apparently one that a lot of manufacturers use for testing. So there's no like grandstands or anything. It's just got a bit of everything in it. So something you wouldn't really associate putting an SUV on, you know, you'd maybe take your Lotus there and have a lot of fun. I just couldn't believe the top of the range turbo e-hybrid with the GT package. It was 2.5 or 2.6 tons, but what that could do over a couple of laps, it was nuts, you know, like 740 horsepower, which obviously helped on the straights, but it was through the corners, which are the impressive things for me. It was like you said, with the DBX, you'd hit the brakes and you'd be turning in and there'd be absolutely no roll. So in a way, it was quite hard to judge what was happening. Yeah. You're almost listening for the tyres going, no, I've had enough, or you're feeling for the understeer, but the way the car was so composed, you're like, could I be going 10 mile an hour faster here? No, you couldn't, but yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's just...
It is. Yeah. It's a remarkable thing.
Yep.
So, what would we buy? Should we hit the challenge?
Absolutely, mate. Yeah. Bring it on.
Oh, dear. Oh, no, I thought that was a performance SUV, but it's a Kia Sportage.
Yes. See, that to me is... That's a modern MPV.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because that would be more practical than an equivalent SUV because of its shape.
Yes.
It's a big open space and it's a good family car. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, yes. So that's not one of my choices.
No. There's a surprise. So what we've done is it was only yesterday a message to you, wasn't it? It was like, right, so we'll do our normal one. So we got four cars, four yep. price brackets.
Yep. Right?
We've done... Under £20,000, under £50,000, under £100,000, and then no limit.
Yep. Where's your laptop?
I've got my laptop here, mate.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I'm an old man. I need to put my glasses on as well.
Oh, my goodness.
What? Shut up.
I want you to start this one, though, because, again, off camera, we're both like, can't wait to tell you my sub 20 grand one. So I'm really intrigued to see what yours is. But I mean, before we do go, I just want to say that firstly, as we all know, cars are expensive. Used cars. So this is new or used. And in fact, yeah. all of mine are lightly used.
Yes, me too.
Well, not lightly ones, a bit more. But it's under 20 grand to find. I instantly thought, oh, I'm going to find something punchy, like an early 2019 X3 M40i.
Yeah.
No way. Like, they're still over 30 grand. So there's a lot less than I thought, sub 20. And as much as we love or hate them, there are so many great cars, which we'll talk about afterwards in case one of us have come up with one of those, that were like almost on my list.
Yeah.
But let's just, yeah. What do you think?
So the challenge is, I think they do dump a load of money, but then they hold their money once they get to a point.
Yep. Yep.
And I think nowadays, actually, that this sub 20 grand category in the 4x4 market is a really interesting one for me because I know we often have a bit of a debate about electric cars and stuff, and Joe's such a fan.
Yep, love him.
One of the big challenges for a certain category of motorists, is that what that's...
Hayabusa.
Yeah. So there's a certain category of motorists called caravanists. Or caravanners.
You're a bit of a caravanner.
No,
I've seen a video on it.
I did a video that's done really, really well towing.
Makes a caravan you a with an electric. You're aside from Top Gear, you're probably the most famous caravanist.
But in all seriousness,
he's moving that on quickly.
No, in all seriousness. So, but one of the big challenges is if you are going to tow a caravan, is what are you going to tow it with? And you know, as we go down the world of electric cars, generally they're very expensive, but two, they're not the best at tow. Well, actually, an electric car for towing is perfect because of the way the torque comes in. But the problem is it affects range and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
But I'm pretty sure that the kind of cars we're looking at, sub 20 grand, most of them are perfect towing cars for caravans. And I'm sure that might kind of keep the prices, you know, help keep the prices okay. strong.
Yeah.
That's just a theory absolutely no...
As I'm not a caravanist like yourself, yeah. I hadn't thought about that aspect or that point of view. But
okay.
I can respect that
okay.
as a expert caravanist.
Right. So my first choice, sub 20,000 quid. I've kind of...
It's a caravan.
It's not a caravan. I've given you a bit of a hint because I've kind of had one of these before.
Oh, okay. You've kind of had one of these.
Well, I have had one of these before.
Is it Range Rover Sport? A Land Rover Discovery?
For sub 20 grand.
Range Rover Sport. Yeah. You could get one, couldn't you?
Maybe.
Is it a Discovery?
No.
A Shogun?
Yeah.
Whoa. Mitsubishi Shogun.
A short wheelbase.
Okay.
Right. This is a top spec. So the Barbarian spec, which I think is one of the top specs.
Yeah.
Short wheelbase. Always quite fancy the look of these. 42,000 miles. 2014 car. So 10 years old.
Yep.
20 grand. Or five quid short of 20 grand.
That's a ped choice and a half. It's not something I had even thought about.
That's why I chose it, you see.
But I see, this is okay. So this is where I'm going to get a little bit pedantic, because you've said SUVs, right?
No, a 4x4 SUV.
Oh, I thought you said SUVs. Well,
what's the difference?
Well, 4x4 is a 4x4. That's a 4x4. An SUV is a sports utility vehicle. There's nothing sporty about that.
No, they're the same thing in modern parlance.
No, I don't know. See, we've talked about it now. Listen, hear me out.
Spell it out for you.
A 4x4 is something that's a four-wheel drive. It's yes.
Yeah,
and so you could argue that my MD Touring is a 4x4. But I'm not convinced that is an SUV, but that is a 4x4, because there's nothing sporty.
But it doesn't. So I think the Americans have kind of bastardized 4x4.
Okay.
So we used to call them 4x4s, and Land Rover had their strapline was the best 4x4 by far. Right?
Yes.
Right. And that was that category of vehicle that would have been a 4x4, and then SUV comes along from America, just a bit like, I don't know, Halloween and Black Friday, and suddenly everything's an SUV.
That's because we're calling... It's a bit like I call our Hoover at home a Hoover, but it's a Dyson or something similar.
So it should be a vacuum.
It should be a vacuum.
Yeah.
And I think that's... We all use SUV as a terminology, but to me, that is not a sports utility vehicle. That is a 4x4.
Okay, what's a Land Rover Defender then?
A 4x4.
Oh.
But no, it is a 4x4, but I would call it an SUV. So you're 100% right. You're 100% right. Forget about what I said. Let us know in the comments.
Anyway.
How much sense I've not made. Double negatives.
But anyway, 40,000 miles. It's okay. All right. It's got a tow bar on it. Look, if I want to go and buy another horse.
Lovely.
Mm.
I couldn't think of anything worse, but it looks...
It's 20 grand's worth of...
Look at that. No, it's cool.
What I did want, and I don't think they're probably worth shed loads now, but the previous gen Shogun, they did, I think it was a Mivec Evolution. It was almost like a Dakar Mitsubishi Pajero.
Oh, yes.
This is obviously, we call them Shoguns everywhere else in the world.
Yep.
Calls them a Pajero. And I really wanted one of them, but I couldn't find one. So.
Yes.
So there you go. That's my choice.
Okay.
What's your?
Well, it's mine. I'm going to have to eat my words now, because I've just argued with you. Well, not argued, debated with you whether that is an SUV or not.
Yeah.
Now, this first one, before I even show you, I have to talk about SUV, sports utility vehicle. So what does that mean? You can argue that my M3 Touring is a sports utility vehicle because it's
an estate car.
It is an estate car, but it's kind of does everything that a sports utility vehicle should do. But don't worry, I'm not going to use an estate, because I thought if I went down the estate route, that would be wrong completely. But I am going somewhere that's I would say it's a little bit, it's a grey area, but I think it's a good shout.
Go on then.
I need to go into Lou's. I send all my suggestions into Lou's page, into Lou's What's that? Right.
Oh.
An Audi A6 All Road. Now,
is it the state car, isn't it?
Well, is it though? Oh, no. Even Patrick disagrees.
Are you on my side?
Yeah, no, it's
a
not.
It's a state car.
It's no, but then what? So what's an X?
It's an old sport. It's not an SUV or a full white.
It's just the BMW X3 is essentially a
so
three series.
When you were sat on the loo this morning, that's the best you could come up with.
No, I came up with a number. This is a bit of
an Audi All Road.
This is a wild card.
Basically,
in
an estate car with raisable suspension and plastic bumpers.
It's very cool. I think the A6 All Road deserves a little segment in our podcast for a number of reasons. Number one, because it's Lou's favourite car in the world.
It's amazing. What a great choice that is.
Yes, exactly. Number two, because Audi stopped making it a couple of years ago because they want to focus on
SUVs.
White goods.
Yeah, they want to sell SUVs, and it's not an SUV. Yeah.
And, people like the Royals use them in the UK. They're just not that that's a reason to buy them or whatever, but I think whenever I see an All Road, especially an A6, I think, wow, they are. It's an understated,
someone
very cool
that,
car. Man. No. Best ride quality in the world if you get one with the electrical air suspension, which I think a lot of the later ones. I think visually, it's a fantastic looking bit of kit, depending on the spec. But anyway, this one, 2017, it's I think it's a one owner car, two owner car, air suspension, 55,000 miles. And just a fantastic. We go on about cars costing a lot of money and, you know, not being
that
affordable.
It's a lot of car for the money, isn't it?
It is a lot of car for
the
money.
You'd have to negotiate them down 600 quid, though.
Yes. Well, there was a lot around 18, 19, but this one was a nicer spec. So I went cheekily. I reckon you could get that for 20 grand. Yeah. But I'm disappointed that Patrick's gone and disagreed.
Well, yes, the first time he's ever.
Yeah, he's piped up. Yeah. Patrick's like, no, black.
He's Joe never gets, on my side.
Joe gets a black card there. Or the red card that he sent off. But anyway, that's...
We're going to argue about my next one then.
That's my left field. That's my left field one. So yeah, no more arguing. Grand. I can't believe I had to go at you about that and then I bring up an estate car that's slightly risen.
That's the best thing about this challenge ever. I love it. Right, okay. So now we're going sub 50,000.
Yes.
Right, so you would hope that the landscape opens up a lot. Because I'm going to preface this because people moan otherwise. £50,000 is a lot of money.
Yep.
To buy a car.
Right? Yep. Especially a used car. That was a Cayman GZ. Yeah.
Oh, very nice.
Very like yours, mate. Yep. I think that had six.
A roof.
Six cylinders.
Yeah, and a roof.
And a roof. Yeah.
So my next one, you're probably going to bitch that this is a 4x4.
No, not at all.
Have we mentioned these already? Maybe not. So I'm going a bit of America.
Oh, okay.
America.
Yep. Oh, God.
They are awesome.
Before we even talk about what that is, when we started this car challenge stuff, Peds were so bad, it was unbelievable. And I know a lot of people agreed in the comments. They were just terrible. Right. Then you recovered, and I think the last one we did, some of your...
Yeah, they were better than us, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
They were on par, I'd say, yeah.
Yeah.
And you just dropped off a cliff again with this one.
Mate,
I mean,
Jeep,
I can't believe that's worth 50 grand.
Jeep Wrangler Rubicon.
50 grand.
They're ace.
They are a fun bit of kit, but 50,000 pounds.
But they're really cool. It's a nice colour, though, don't you think?
It is a nice colour.
Yep. So, but the cool thing is, right, well, these ones, you can take the doors off, you can jet wash them out on the inside.
Listen, if
so
I
this is a 17,500 mile, 22 plate, so two years old, 50,000 quid.
Is it on? Please tell me at least it's on BF Goodrich tyres or something.
Do you know what? I haven't actually checked.
They listen. I have got a newfound respect for these because when I went out in the Easter Jeep Safari with BF Goodrich last year, I was just blown away by how good they were off road and stuff. But as a road car, they are atrocious, and I seem to. I'm not sure if this is factual, but I think their crash test record is horrendous.
Oh, you don't look at the Euro NCAP.
No, you just ignore that.
So I've spent a lot of time in Rubicons, and they are off-road. They are unbelievable.
Okay.
And I don't think they're bad. They're a bit better than the old Defender.
Okay.
On road.
Yeah.
But they're just fun. I wanted something a bit different. I could have chose something that, you know.
Mate, it's way, because my choice at this is vanilla. It's very obvious.
I was trying to go a bit left field, and I thought that spec wise, nice colour and everything. Yeah.
So what is it? It's a 2 litre what?
2 litre petrol.
So what does that produce?
It's got engine. It's a couple.
It's got features and spec. Performance. Let's look at the performance.
Come on. 99 miles an hour top speed. 268
bhp. Wow. Does it have 0-6? It doesn't. It doesn't show the 0-60. They tried to measure it, but the 4 mile runway was long enough.
You needed a calendar. It's not about 0-60.
I know. Yeah, but it is about being. I mean, if it doesn't even do 100 mile an hour, you can imagine how slow and imagine that with your three kids in and your dogs and your luggage and you're accelerating onto a motorway. It's just dangerous, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, you probably get there quicker on your bicycle.
Yeah, maybe. But so there we go. All right, so you like my second choice then?
Yeah, yeah. That's very you though, Ped.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah,
you're such a pal. Come on then, get out your X5M.
Yes. No. Not $50,000. At $50,000, I talked about this car very recently on my channel as being probably the best car in the world as an overall package. But that was the very latest LCI version of it that's just come out. Obviously, you couldn't get that because I think the car I had there was 90 something grand. So we're looking at.
It is an X5.
No. Oh, no, I've gone to the wrong one. I've just ruined it. There we go.
Just an X5.
So it's an X5 30D.
Oh, the X5 then will be your under 100 grand one then.
Oh, God. It's an X5 30D.
So, that's going to go to the moon and back on a tank.
Yeah, pre-LCI. So it's a slightly older version. This is a 22 plate. It's at a main dealer, 2,000 miles. So it's just been running, one owner. Has everything, including air suspension. Really nice spec. There was a number of different colours, grey, black and white. But pan roof, this has got all the tech packs, black leather. I mean, $50,000 for that.
What, how old was it again?
22. It's on a 23 plate, I think. So it's like,
wow,
18 months old. But it's at a main dealer, so you get minimum of a year warranty.
Okay.
But yeah, I think for value for money, in my opinion, there's not a better package out there.
Yeah.
Available, and for $50,000, I mean, it's a lot of car. And I think that's where my money would go as a family car and something that is relatively sporty to drive and fast enough. I think it'll do about 6 seconds and 60, which is quick enough. It'll do about 45 miles to the gallon, which is amazing. But yeah,
can you jet wash it out inside?
You can't jet, no, you probably could, but things would stop working and warning lights would come on. So very different. Very different cars, right?
Oh, yeah.
Very different. Yeah, if you like jet washing your car inside, then definitely go for that one. But otherwise, the BM's
can
better everywhere.
Can you take the doors off that one? Because the doors come off this. You can take the doors off the roof.
If you like jet washing your interior of your car and you like removing doors of your car, go for that one. For anything else car related, go for this one.
Yeah, basically, pretty much. Okay.
Should I start with $100,000one? If you've already ruined it.
Yeah, yeah. So $100,000.
Yeah.
Oh, let me guess. Joe's going to choose another BMW and X5.
Listen, I think the X5 is such an amazing vehicle.
Really?
I do the early ones, the latest ones. They are very hard to beat. Again, I've just given back an X5M competition, the very latest one. It's just mind-blowingly good at everything. The ride's a bit firm.
How much is it?
So, the one I had was $150,000.
Oh, so that'll be an unlimited one, will that be?
No. No.
Yeah. And so, for over $100,000, yeah. Joe's picked.
So, 2020.
That's fine then.
Yeah, that would. I'm not that bad. But this one, this is an X demo. It's done 2,000 miles. So, it's had the running service, which would have cost you $500-600. Beautiful spec. It's got everything, ultimate pack, whatever. $135,000 this was list. It is less than a year old.
Monthly payments, $1,700.
No, that's crazy.
Oh, that's a shocker, isn't it? How much do you have to put down for that?
Cash deposit of $10,000.
Oh,
but $95,000, so you're getting $40,000 off It's literally, like I said, it's an ex-demo. It's been running with all the toys you can imagine. Really nice, classy spec. And all the, the performance of these things are just ridiculous. I timed this one actually about a year and a half ago, 0-60 in 3.2 or 3.3
seconds.
That's
outrageous.
In an SUV. Pat and I actually had a fantastic road trip and one over to Nürburgring. It was, wasn't it? My parents in the car about 2 years ago. Exactly the same spec. Absolutely loved it. I mean, that car, you've got the M5, F90 M5 front seats, which are the best seats in the world, as far as I'm concerned. I think as a car for less than 100, as an SUV, it's pretty crunchy.
So here's a question then. That or your M3 Taurus?
It's a really difficult one.
So here's a question. So if you weren't a YouTuber, so if you didn't have a channel car,
if
you'd
I
have one of them, wouldn't you?
No, if I wasn't a YouTuber, I'd probably have an F90 M5 competition, which is weird. And you know what? Ironically, I think an F90 M5 would actually do better on the channel than the M3 because everyone's got M3s these days. But yeah, it's a difficult one. But I think just because I like the idea of a car more than an SUV still,
yeah,
it would push me towards that. But also, something we're not talking about is running costs.
Oh, yeah, true.
And even things like tyres on big SUVs. You know, that X5M has Michelin Pilot Sport 4 SUV tyres on them, which are obviously developed for much bigger, heavier loads.
Yeah.
But obviously then costs you more money to replace. So things like, all these wearing parts, I just think, and fuel costs, I was averaging 16 miles a gallon in that, whereas I'm getting nearly twice that in the M3 Touring. So I think what you've always got to remember, and people always say to me, oh, I can get, Joe, is it worth, like non-car people, oh, I'm looking at this Range Rover, used Range Rover, 15 grand. That's great. But have you got the money to pay for the consumables with that car? Because once upon a time, that was £100,000. So you've got to, do you know what I mean?
You've got to.
Anyway, let's get on to your X5M.
You were talking about cars that maybe people used to kind of describe how large their manhood was.
Yes.
And how, look at me, how well I've done.
Yep.
I have a secret thing for an SUV, and I've only driven one once, and it was one of the early ones.
Okay.
And it just blew me away. So I've gone for...
Oh, that's an Archie Hamilton.
An Archie Hamilton.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So Range Rover Sport.
Yeah.
SVR.
SVR.
Now, have you driven one of those?
I haven't.
And having owned a Range Rover Sport, but ours was like a diesel autobiography, these things, they just sound amazing. This is a 2021 as well, so it probably still sounds good.
Before they put the X5M engine in it, which the new one has got, which then sounds pretty average compared to that.
But for 79 grand, 13,000 mile car, I just think they look ace.
I think they're the best sounding things.
Sound
on the
mega,
planet.
Look ace. They have got a bit of a reputation, unfortunately. Well, I think they have.
A bit football-y.
I mean, there were a few urban-y ones and kind of buoyed up ones and stuff, but that's relatively factory, dark blue, beautiful colour. I just think that's a nice car.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm not a JLR fan, but I can appreciate an SVR when they go past or even parked up, but they sound fantastic. And the spec on that's quite nice.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah. Well, do you approve on that one?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go for it personally because it's not my sort of car, but I do, I can appreciate where that's coming from.
Now, the one that I have got on here, you just saw while I was, flicking through.
Wait, was that your dream?
I wonder.
Oh, no.
No. So sub 100 grand. It's not, but it is.
Wait, is that the one you had?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So my Defender long-termer.
Actually, that's not too bad.
That was 87 grand.
Yeah. That's really...
I know.
That's 65 grand. That starts to make
a lot
of sense.
So anyway, while I was looking, I found my long-termer, my Hendy long-termer, my 75th anniversary Defender is up for sale for 66.5 grand.
At Hendy in Southampton.
Yeah.
Hendy Land Rover.
Yeah.
You know what? I have to say...
As 66 grand, that's a lot of car.
It's a lot of car. It's a lot of a lot of car. A lot of Portaloo for
a lot of 66,
a lot of bed. but that's really. I bet. Have you been looking? Have you? I bet you showed Tracy that, and you're like,
oh, no, I haven't, because I only found it. I only found it late last night.
Okay.
Like, oh no.
Yeah.
But yeah, that the only challenge with that is it having ran one for 6 months, and that's the best bit about having long term is a 90 is still just too much of a compromise to live with on a daily basis.
Yeah,
getting in and out of the back seat is a faff. You've done it.
Yeah, me and Pat.
Yeah. And the boot space isn't massive. It's fine for most things, but it's just a bit of a compromised vehicle. A 110 would be a better car, but I still love the way that thing looks.
Oh, yeah. The 90 looks
ace.
Yeah. And I think what you're saying is the compromise of boot space and getting in and out of the cabin in the back, but yet on the outside, it's still massive. It's not
and it's massive on the inside. It's just difficult to get into it.
I was
like, oh no, I wish I hadn't seen that.
Wow, that's I'm surprised. Yeah. I would have thought that'd have been up for 80 or something. But
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So now we've got unlimited money.
Dun, dun, dun.
X5M competition, brand new. So I know I'm gonna get so much shit for this.
Okay. Well, then we got to start with you for sure.
So, unlimited funds.
Yep.
I haven't driven this model, but I have driven one of these.
Are you making every time there's an excuse, you start with a number of excuses?
No, it's not an excuse.
Okay.
So I'm thinking, okay, over 100 grand.
Yep.
There's lots of options. I the sensible bet would be just buy a new Range Rover because they're amazing.
Yep.
Or if you were going to spend unlimited money, get the Range Rover SV Autobiography, but they're like £200,000
to insure.
If you could insure it. So that I decided not to go Range Rover. I thought, you know, you could do Urus. We've already talked about those. So I've gone.
Wow, that's the same colour as my new mountain bike. okay, it looks pretty bling in that colour.
This is an Aston Martin DBX, but it's the 707.
Yes. Okay. So
that's 707 PS. So that's 707. That's a lot, right? And that's £188,950, and it's not new either. It's 500 mile on the clock, but it's a 2024 car.
Wow!
But what that a color!
What is the color? Does it say?
I don't know. I just saw it. It's from Aston Martin Chichester as well.
Yeah.
Let's just see.
Well, if you're listening to this, you need to head over to the YouTube channel and see the colour.
Storm purple, signature metallic.
Oof. I like the colour. I can't deny that it looks... I think they look great, the DBX. I know we talked about them a bit. Yeah. I think from the front, they look great. I'm not a fan of the way they look at the back. But, I mean, what a car. That is a statement piece.
They drive unreal.
Yeah.
I mean, they handle as good as a Vantage. They're just ridiculous things. As I said, I've only driven the base DBX. I've not driven the 707.
Yeah.
But I just thought that, I mean...
That is pretty special. Yep.
Yeah. It's the colour.
Yeah. That is very... It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean,
What?
Yeah. No, it is pretty cool. Yeah.
I'll take that.
It's not my taste, but I do like the colour.
Lots of bits of carbon.
I'd say it's probably better looking than my choice.
Okay. Come on in,
mine's substantially cheaper than that as well.
Is it? I'm trying to work out what the features and spec. What's the 0 to 60 time performance?
Is it 3.6?
3.1.
3.1! Nearly 200 mile an hour top speed. Oh my goodness.
In a car, I bet it doesn't have the weight. I wonder if it's got the weight. No, but it hasn't.
It must be 2.2
Sizes
tons?
And dimensions, here we go. Length, weight, curb weight, 2.24.
4.5, okay, yep.
It's not hideous.
No.
A Lotus Electra's like...
I suppose because there's no hybrid stuff in there. No. It's not. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Impressive.
Go on then.
I mean, my one...
X5M.
mine's come down to...
An X7?
No. It's not a BMW. If you guys actually go back to some of the car challenges we've done, a lot of mine haven't been BMWs.
Okay.
But yeah, this one's maybe been a bit BMW strong. But no, it's not a BM. It's an SUV it's the best dynamically, best driving dynamically. Yeah, it's a Porsche Cayenne Turbo GT. They only ran them for 21, 22.
They can't call the new one the Turbo. Is it the Turbo with a Turbo GT running pack or something?
Yeah, so the new one in Europe, due to our legislations, we can't run... Yeah, we don't get the actual hardcore Turbo GT. We get the Turbo E Hybrid with the GT package.
Right, I've never managed to remember exactly how to describe that.
No, I mean, I might have still got that wrong, but something like that. But this one, I mean... You know, it's, I mean, you drove that Porsche press car they had, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just could not believe I'd put that car on par with the M5 CS, which I think is one of the best, if you're carrying more than two passengers, one of the best things on the planet, one of the best cars in the world. And I think the only thing that holds me back from the Cayenne Turbo GT is I much prefer a traditional SUV shape. I wish they did it in like the normal Cayenne shape.
The sportbacky type.
Yeah, the coupe, I think, just looks a bit...
Although the two exhausts look cool.
Exactly, yeah. So the Turbo GT's obviously got like its standout features. And this particular one was actually... So there's 16, as we speak, on Autotrader. At the time, I think they were about 140, 150 grand. That's what they sort of are still 2 years old. So they haven't lost value, which to me says that they are a bloody good product. Excuse my language. But this one's actually the cheapest one out of the 14-15. But a bit like your Aston, it's a pretty like, okay, Marmite, you either love it or hate it colour.
Martini livery, here we go.
No, not quite that crazy. No, we're looking at an X5 again. There we go. I think it's this one, I hope. Come on, Joe. There we go.
Ooh.
So
the wheels.
It was the only one in it's in Negaro blue. Ooh. Which is, I know Negaro blue from the RS2 when that was launched. And Negaro blue, and you think the RS2, when I was showing Lou this morning, Lou was like, oh, that's interesting, because the RS2 was a Porsche Audi developed car.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, that's where but this is a paint sample Porsche Negaro blue. 130 grand.
Wow.
And it, like I said, it was the cheapest one. It's got delivery, or maybe it hasn't. Maybe it's got like 8,000 miles on it. But I mean, yeah, that's what, 132 grand, rough, just under 5,000 miles. But I,
what a car there.
Oh, I absolutely love that thing. And I mean, it's solely based on the fact that that car drives so unbelievably well. I'd have to have that. But there's loads, there's black, there's white, there's whatever colour you want, but just went with a slightly different colour. But there you go.
That's good. So apart from me Jeep Wrangler and the debatable 4x4 Shogun. We did all right there.
Oh, listen, as always, let us know in the comments which way you'd go, because I think your higher end cars definitely were great, in my opinion, great choices. But yeah, that's why I love you. That's why we work so well, because we both got very different tastes in a lot of things.
I have to think about things just to wind you up. Right. What's going to really go pull his chain? I know this one.
He doesn't. He just says that. Yeah.
No, I just choose what I like, and you just take the piss out of me.
Classic. What? Oh my goodness, that's been over an hour.
I know.
Wow.
I know.
Where did that time go?
No idea. Absolutely no idea.
Oof. Yeah, nice. Is that an MG?
No, it's a Triumph V6 Spitfire GT6.
Oh, okay. Oh, pretty cool.
That is very cool. That's very cool.
That is pretty cool, yeah. Very cool. Nice. Look at that Passat parked out there on the electric. Like, that's an electric bay. I wouldn't do that.
I know.
I mean, seriously.
What a loser.
Owner of a blue Passat estate.
I know.
Who would, seriously? I know. Anyway. On that note,
that was a good one, Nat.
It was.
Don't forget, like, subscribe, share, comment, follow us on Facebook. Do all the things you should be doing anyway.
Yes.
And we'll see you very soon for another episode of the Drive Talk podcast powered by Michelin. Massive thanks to Podium Place again.
Yes.
For hosting us and roasting us.
Yep.
What's that? Don't touch that. It's expensive.
Yeah.
See you on the next one, guys.
Cheers.